The chairs are popular. I have some guess as to why. It was very sweet to sit with you and listen to the rain. I thought that was one of the highlights for me today. And and then I was thinking, listening to the rain is genjo koan. Listening to the rain is when we fully open to it, when we're not, caught up in our own stories, our own suffering, and just simply being, simply enjoying, simply letting the rain come through us. Maybe that's genjo koan. Maybe that's what Dogen's talking about in this. The other image that comes to me that I really like, an image of sitting practice, meditation practice, is I picture a house, a very, kind of like a grand home building, maybe a little bit like this building here. And it's a house that has all the doors open and all the windows open and all the lights on. And there's nobody home, and it's just everything is allowed to arise and pass totally freely. And so in a way for me, this is like an image of what we're doing here. This simple but not easy request to be present with what's happening and let it come and let it go. And then there's a way that there's an active sort of presence where we're noticing what's coming in, what's coming through the doors, what's coming through the windows, what is this heart and mind experiencing right now? What's the, as Brian said this morning, where is the pleasure, this subtle sense of well-being or pleasure in the breath? Where is the body a little bit tight, a little bit contracted? What's the emotional flavor of this experience? So we can notice these things. We can notice the sort of the details. And in some way, I associate that with our insight practice, with our vipassana practice, this clear seeing, this to see more, to look more closely. That's one of the reasons we suggest slowing down, because the more slowly we go, the more details we can see. And the premise of vipassana, the premise of insight meditation, is that the more closely we look, the more we're able to see how things really are. It's like we're seeing the nature of things. We're seeing the nature of ourselves, and we're seeing the nature of things. So that's a little bit of the flavor of insight practice, this clear seeing. To value that careful attention, that careful looking, that there's something there for us in, I know, it's the breath, it's the in-breath, it's the out-breath. That's our kind of usual way. But that's an idea. That's not the breath. And when we look for the breath, when we look for the in-breath, when we look to see, can I see the beginning of the in-breath? Can I see the middle of the in-breath? Can I see where the in-breath ends? Is there a pause there? Oh, that's already the out-breath. You know, when we start to look very closely, very carefully, things aren't as solid, maybe, as we thought they were. So we have this house, and we're looking, and so you can see all the things that come through and see the details. But then there's this other way of almost like very receptive, very much allowing, very much letting the rain, letting the breeze of the air conditioning, you know, whatever it is, just receiving sensation. And so we're not so concerned about, you know, finding detail. We're not so concerned about looking very closely, but it's more about this intention to more of a way of being rather than a way of doing, instead of doing, being, doing to being. So in a way, this more receptive style I associate with Zen practice, and with the kind of Zen practice we're talking about with Dogen, this idea of just sitting. What does it mean to just sit? It's a little bit of an unusual idea, I think, because most of the time we do something for some reason. We do something in order for something else to happen. And even with meditation practice, with Buddhist practice, it's a very usual idea to think that we meditate, you know, to get calm, to get concentrated, to have insight, to wake up, you know. So there's a reason we meditate. There's a purpose for meditation. And that's good. That's fine. That's an important side of practice. But there's also a problem with that. The problem with that is that, like any technique, we start to bring ourself and our own, you know, maybe our own kind of agendas into it, our own conditioning. So then meditation can become something that either, well, that was a good sitting, or that wasn't good, or I'm no good at it, or maybe I'm really good, maybe I'm better than everybody here, you know. And so it's in this sort of space, which is actually very far from the space of the Buddha, very far from the space of awakening. So this is a little bit of the trap of meditation. And so Dogen, maybe part of the genius of Dogen is finding a way out of this trap. And so he's saying, he is suggesting this practice of just sitting. And to just sit means to just do something for its own sake. It's like, it's not, we're not trying to get something outside of the activity of sitting. I was trying to think of how to bring that idea to life, and I think there's so many things in our life that we do in this way that we don't necessarily think about. I have two young daughters, who are 5 years old and 3 years old, and one of my favorite things in the world is to tickle them, you know, and we wrestle and tickle, and there's no reason I do that other than for the sheer enjoyment of, in that moment, you know, it's completely for itself. Or the other thing I thought about is, you know, Brian talked about music, this idea of, you know, something like singing in the shower. I don't know if anyone sings in the shower anymore. Probably not here. But, you know, it's this expression of our being that is this natural, you know, this natural manifestation. So maybe this is a little bit of the flavor of what Dogen calls just sitting. On the first day of retreat, it can be a struggle. It can be difficult, and you know, for one thing, physically, we're not used to just this much meditation, this much stillness, and then someone mentioned earlier that it felt like her mind was more busy, more active, more thinking, more stories than usual, you know, and then sitting at home. And I can appreciate that. And I think that maybe part of what happens is that maybe the mind is more active, and maybe, you know, just being here and in the stillness, things certainly do bubble up. But also, we're more aware. We don't realize how much more aware we are, but we're more aware. So we're noticing the ways we are usually, but that we don't notice. So one of the most helpful pieces of advice that I think it's worth reflecting on for the first day of retreat, but in general for Dharma practice, is what one of my teachers once told me is, wherever there's any sense of struggle in the practice, wherever there's any sense of struggle in the sitting, is a sign that there's something that is not being opened to. There's something that's not being accepted. There's some kind of resistance between how things are and how, you know, how I think they should be, how I want them to be. And so that's this, I think we're so familiar with that, you know, this sense of struggle. So Dogen says, just sitting is the Dharma gate of joy and ease. Just sitting is the Dharma gate of joy and ease. Just sitting, just relaxing that struggle. Just opening to whatever is happening in the moment without any sense of it should be otherwise. This is the way in. This is actually the Dharma gate of freedom. And Dogen specifically says, this just sitting is not a meditation technique. You know, so somehow it's like, it's off that wheel of getting it right, getting it wrong. Does that sort of make sense? I mean, is that, you know, this is, I think it's not too difficult to talk about this idea of just sitting, in Japanese, like shikantaza, but to actually feel it and to actually do it, I think is the work of a lifetime. Maybe someone would disagree with me, but I would say this place of just sitting is where Vipassana practice leads, you know. Is mindfulness is a kind of a doing, but it's a doing that undoes itself. It's a doing that undoes itself. So at first, you know, there's a doing, it's okay, come back to the breath, back to the body, remember to come back, remember to connect, I'm dreaming of this, okay, come back, I'm dreaming of this, come back. You know, so that's a kind of training. But the unfolding of mindfulness, and sometimes we say mindfulness matures into insight. This unfolding is in the direction of less and less doing. It's like, so it's just something to, you know, see, you know, play with and see, you know, how that is for you. What is it like to do less and less? And then it's almost like riding a bicycle. If I find that there's a little bit of a spaciness or sort of dreaming, then I bring in more clear seeing, more vipassana, more, you know, notice the breath, sit up a little straighter, you know, a little more active side of meditation. But then it's, you know, then it's very nice to drop into that, to that just sitting. So we say, just sitting is not a means to an end, not even a means of becoming enlightened. And so truly just sitting is a kind of a pure activity. It has nothing, no justification outside of itself. And so this is one of the most unusual things for a person to do. It's like to, you know, and I think it's a little bit why I remember when I was practicing Zen, and someone would say, well, what did you do that week, that month, that year? I said, well, nothing. I literally just sat. Why? Well, no reason. So it's something we can sort of talk about and sort of understand, but I think it's a feeling. And so I offer that as a little bit of a frame for the rest of the teachings this week, you know. And this one way to think about it is this interplay of the active and the receptive. So Dogen says, when you first seek Dharma, you imagine you're far away from its environs. And I think this is how we all come to practice, you know, that there's something called me, there's something called myself, there's something called the Dharma, there's something called the Buddha, and these are, you know, these are not the same thing. And so we're trying to, what is Dharma? What is practice? So when you first seek Dharma, you imagine you're far away from its environs. But then Dogen says, but Dharma is already correctly transmitted. Dharma is already correctly transmitted. You are immediately your original self. You're immediately your original self. Well, first of all, who else could you be but yourself, right? And so how I understand this is that from the moment we sit down and from the moment we have this intention to be with ourselves, to be with our experience exactly as it is, to meet the moment exactly as it is, that's it. That this is it, you know. It's not about stages, it's not about levels, it's not about, you know, finally improving enough and getting rid of enough of my problems and enough of my faults and developing enough, you know, be a little nicer, be a little more generous or something. Then I can be a Buddha. Then I can be the Dharma. And Dogen is saying the Dharma's already been transmitted, that you're here, that you're practicing, something's already been transmitted. And this practice, this sitting, when we say just sitting, it includes everything, right? So walking, speaking, thinking, everything is just sitting, is we're immediately our original self. Um, So anyway, I find that to be a very beautiful formulation of the Buddhist path. That it's almost like the path of no path. It's like, so in this way, practice is not about finally getting it right, or finally only if I'm with every breath, or, you know, whatever. It's actually remembering something, remembering who we are, who we always have been. And then what is originally ours becomes truly ours. Then practice is an expression of our being. And we practice not because we are somehow deficient and we're trying to make ourselves better, but it's the natural thing. What else could we do but practice? What else could we do but be ourselves and share ourselves and help other people to be themselves? There's this great story of Dogen where he, you know, so a little bit about the, you know, so Dogen was a monk from Japan, and he was born in the year 1200, so. As Brian was saying, his mother died when he was young. I think he lost both parents when he was young. And that inspired him to really understand the nature of things and understand the nature of life. So at some point when he was in his early 20s, he went to China. And he got the idea that there were very deep, wonderful masters practicing in China, and he would go try to find his true teacher. And so he took a boat with one other monk and ended up finding his teacher and ended up having some very meaningful for him, important experiences. And at a certain point, he came back to Japan. And then someone asked him, he was asked, what did you bring back with you from China? And Dogen said, I came back empty-handed. Okay, you know. And then so the guy tried again. He said, well, what did you learn from all that hard practice in China? And Dogen said, I learned that my eyes are horizontal and my nose is vertical. So he had a good sense of humor, you know? I mean, it's interesting what he didn't say. He didn't say, I learned the highest, deepest truth that's possible. He didn't say, I learned the one true way of meditating. I learned how to still my mind and, let go of everything bad and cultivate everything good. I perfected myself. You know, he didn't say anything like that. He said, my eyes are horizontal, and I learned that my nose is vertical. It's sort of like we can learn many things, we can improve ourselves in different ways, which is a beautiful thing to do. We can cultivate the heart, but can you make your nose any more vertical than it is? You know, it's like he saw who he was, just as he was. And so that was the answer. That was the answer. So I hope you're getting a little bit of the flavor of Dogen's approach. And in the Genjo Koan, it's like, you know, there's something like 12 or 13 different sections. And he's saying the same thing in each section in a different way. in a different angle, in a different. So it's like, it turns out that sometimes the simplest, most obvious things, my eyes are horizontal, my nose is vertical. It's the most difficult thing to accept. It's the most difficult thing to to maybe fully accept who we are, exactly as we are. I wanted to say a little bit about the title of Genjo Koan. Brian and I were saying, I mean, there could be a whole book written just on the there are books just on the title. Are you familiar with the word koan? You know what a koan is? You know, in Zen, certain schools of Zen use koans, these kind of stories, or a little bit of like riddles or mysteries, or they're sort of like they're questions that are not logical, that the rational, logical mind it doesn't make sense, and often there's some kind of expression of opposites that we're called on to resolve. So I mean, you know, the things like I remember the one that I got in Japan was, before mother and father, what is your original face? You know, so that's a common one. Before your mother and father are born, what is your original face? And or, you know, where you heard, like, what is the sound of one hand clapping? I don't know if that's a real one or just on TV or something, but and the idea is not that you figure it out, in the same way that meditation, that just sitting, that any of these practices are not something to figure out. There's a great section in here where Dogen talks about if a bird tries to, I can't remember, it's okay, so now if a bird or a fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, this bird or this fish will not find its way or its place. If you try to figure out the end before you even start, you know, it doesn't work. So that's this, you know, with koans, it's not about figuring it out, but it's somehow about sitting with it and letting it break us open, letting it somehow, you know. So the other one is that we were given is does a dog have Buddha nature? You know, you might have heard this one. And so, you know, it's the teaching of Zen is that all beings, without exception, have Buddha nature. So then the student asks, well, does a dog have Buddha nature? And so, you know, you think the answer is, well, yes, all beings have Buddha nature, right? I mean, that's the kind of logical thing. But the teacher says, moo. He says no. And so that's, you know, so that's often given to a Zen student to not to puzzle it together, but to sit with moo, to sit with no. So every breath is moo, moo, moo. Or so, you know, in some schools of Zen, at the end of the day, and we could try it here, at the end of the day, everyone is just doing moo, moo. And when at first I was a little chuckling. I was like, oh, you know, what's going on here? And then it started getting louder, and then it started getting louder, and then it started getting so intense. It was like I felt like my whole body was just somehow shimmering with this feeling of like, it was like all of, and I remember specifically the teacher, it was like the suffering, all the suffering of a lifetime, of a human lifetime, was put into this mu. It was the most powerful, most beautiful thing. You know, it was just channeling this over and over. So that's mu, and that's so a koan. So a koan is this sort of question. It's the question that's not in our head, but it's something that we meet with the heart. It's something that we meet with our full being, our full sincerity. And one of the great practices that sometimes we even do here is to try to find, what is my question? What is your question? What is the question that's really in your heart? And to sit with that. So that's a little bit of the flavor of koan. And so, and then genjo is translated in different ways. I think the characters, gen is usually translated as an appearance or an arising of something. And jo is complete. So this in itself is a very beautiful teaching of like, in the impermanence of things, in the arising and passing away of things, is their very completion, is their very perfection, you know? And so this is basic dharma, you know, the fundamental teaching of impermanence. And something about, in that very impermanence, something is complete, something is perfect, not in the sense of perfect held to some standard, but perfect in the way that just sitting is perfect. Perfect in itself. Perfect without needing to compare it to anything else. That it has absolute value. So this is genjo, the arising of experience. And in that arising, in that very arising, it's perfection. It's absolute value. And then koan is, this question, this question. So sometimes genjo koan is translated as the koan of the present moment, the koan of now, the koan of our human life. And there's, of course, this being Dogen and this being Japanese and Chinese, there's another meaning of koan. Ko is said to represent the universal side of experience, the side of experience where everything is equal. So sometimes we call that equality. Even though we're all different here, there's a side of us that's all the same, right? We're all people. We all have some commonalities to our life. And so that's the sort of the equality of things. So that's ko. And an is our uniqueness, our individuality, the particularity of everything. So in every moment, every arising, everything that can be known but this body and mind has both of these sides, has a universal side and has a differentiated side, a particular side. Does that make sense? You know, so, I mean, in a way, this maps to form and emptiness. The empty side of things is what we all share in common, what everything shares in common, is that it's empty, it's not fixed, it's impermanent. And even though it's empty, something exists, right? So if you tell your Zen teacher, oh, everything's empty, he or she will reach over and they might, you know, pull your ear or do something, give you a smack. And you say, ow. You say, well, is that empty? You know, is there something there, right? You know, so this is koan. This is the meeting of form and emptiness, the meeting of equality and difference. And actually, not to put another monkey wrench in this, if this is not esoteric enough already, but I was talking to my Zen teacher about, you know, I was laughing about the story of Dogen with the eyes are horizontal, the nose is vertical, and he said, yeah, and do you know where they meet? Said, oh, right there, right around there. And it was like, you know, maybe there's another level to what Dogen is saying about what's horizontal, what is this sort of the equal nature of things, and what is the unique, particular nature of things. And where these meet is Genjo Koan. And where these meet is our life. And so, here's the translation of Genjo Koan that I finally settled on, which is, the koan of the arising present moment in its particularity and its universality. I don't know if that's a mouthful, but the koan of now, the koan of our life. This is the heart of practice. This is what the Buddha called the middle way. Everything is empty, but everything is also real, in a sense. And how to hold both of those truths and how to realize that is, you know, maybe the request of practice. So that was sort of just to give a little bit of a frame, a theoretical frame around some of these teachings. And don't think about it. Just let it go, you know. And maybe in your practice, in your sitting, you will have some intuitive feeling of what is this? What does that mean? What is Genjo Koan? This is the middle way, or this is just sitting, or this is, you know, just let these ideas sort of float away. And in some ways, it's like planting seeds. And I mean, and Dogen says very explicitly in here, when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they don't necessarily notice that they're Buddhas. So this is us most of the time. You know? However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. So Genjo Koan is considered the heart of Dogen's expression of practice and this formulation of Zen practice. And then there's a section of Genjo Koan that's often considered the heart of Genjo Koan. So I just wanted to briefly share that. And this is the part that goes to study the Buddha way is to study the self. And this is what we're doing here. In every sitting, in every walking, we are using mindfulness, using awareness to look at ourselves, to meet ourselves, to encounter ourselves, in a kind way, in a compassionate way, in a loving way. That's all it is. That's all there is to meet over and over again, to meet ourselves. And what I love about this is like I'm saying, the Buddha way isn't other than ourself. There's no Buddha way outside of ourself. There's no Buddha outside of ourself. If you think the Buddha and myself are far apart, then check it out. Check it out. You know, that's, and so this word to study the self is sometimes another translation of it is to learn. To learn the Buddha way is to learn the self. To learn the self. The Chinese character is for learn is the character for self, and then the character for wings of a bird. And this is from a commentary by the wonderful Zen teacher Shohaku Okamura. And he suggests that this kind of learning, this kind of studying, is the way a bird learns to fly. You know, so we're learning to fly. We're learning how to be ourselves. And I don't know so much about birds and how birds learn to fly, but I remember watching with delight how my children learn to walk, you know, and there's a long time that they're just watching. They're watching everything. I mean, they can't do anything else, right? They can't move. So they're just watching. They're just watching. And, you know, at some point, there's this moment where they sort of hoist themselves up, usually on the sofa, next to the sofa or something. And they're, I think that's called creeping or something, where they're going along with the, you know, it's assisted walking with the furniture. And it's like training wheels. But there's a moment where they let go. And it's like, hey, wow, look, she's standing. And it's this, and then of course, quickly they fall. But it's that moment of letting go of this absolute trust. This absolute trust, this balance, this knowing we can do this. We really can do this practice. And, you know, these are just the moments that I think about and savor. And I think each of us, even today, you know, this one moment of being present, one moment of coming back, one moment of letting go of something that we didn't need to have in the first place, that it wasn't helping us, some idea about how we should be, or some memory, or some feeling of guilt or shame or something. That in the moment we see, wait a second, that's not true. Maybe that's not, I don't need that anymore. That's this moment of just learning how to be a self, learning how to fly, learning how to walk. So Dogen says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To learn the Buddha way is to learn how to be a person. We're learning how to be a person. And then he goes on to say, to study the self is to forget the self. To study the self is to forget the self. There's something in this learning, of learning how to be me, that I can't fully be myself until I also go beyond myself in some way. I see through myself in some way, go beyond myself. So it's to forget the self. I think we all have no moments of, we are so absorbed, we're so merged in an activity that it's like time just disappears. I remember as a kid reading a book and just being so absorbed in the story and laying on my bed that it's like the sun went down and all of a sudden it's like 3 hours, 4 hours, you know. Maybe for you it's dancing, or maybe it's some activity, some movement practice. I think this is very common when we watch a film. If you have the kind of mind that sort of, that just goes into the story, and we just lose ourselves. So this is that's one flavor of forgetting the self. Another flavor of forgetting the self is maybe in this more Vipassana style, of through our mindfulness, through our care and our attention, we start to see that the boundaries, the lines that we thought were so fixed, actually, you know, where do I end and this cushion begin? Where do I end and you begin? You know, it's like we get so close that, you know, it's sort of like Google Maps when you zoom in. You know, it's like it doesn't make sense I'm not sure where I end and where the world begins. So to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. And in that forgetting of the self, what one of the ways that I feel into that, or I mean, you can explore this in your practice, is the feeling tone of forgetting the self is this wonderful. What a relief. What a relief to this thing that I've been so worried about and so obsessing over and so self-conscious about. You know, we all know that experience of to be able to drop that and forget that. It's like, how wonderful, you know, how wonderful. So, precisely because there is so much suffering in this kind of self-concern, in this kind of self-absorption, and then Dogen goes on to say, to forget the self is to be awakened by everything, to be actualized by everything. When I'm not so obsessed with me, there's room for everything else, to appreciate everything else, and everything else comes forth, and I start to notice the world in a different way. So this is what we're doing, you know, whether it has the flavor of Zen, of this just sitting, whether it has the flavor of this loving awareness, this loving mindfulness of Vipassana, of caring enough to look again, to look closely. I love this, the word respect literally means to look again. And so this willingness, as Brian said, this willingness to be present, this willingness to look again, and to look again, to look again at our hearts, our minds, our experience, is this fundamental act of self-respect. You know? And then when we learn how to meet ourselves in this way, maybe what Dogen is saying, we can meet others, you know. We're available for others. We can respect others through seeing others in a new way, through seeing others in a fresh way. And this gets into this final piece of this. To be awakened by all things is to drop away body and mind. To drop off body and mind of self and other. And I think this is so beautiful. It's like when we let go of our attachment to body and mind, to this body and mind, we are also freeing the bodies of minds of others. When I see who I am, when I see my nature, it's not like, oh great, I saw my nature and you guys are all, you know, different. It's like, I see your nature too. And when you see who you are, you see who I am. And so this is, in this way, it's we practice together and we awaken together. That's in one of the stories of the Buddha's enlightenment, he says something like, I and all beings are now awakened. Yeah, this is a good medicine for those moments when I feel like practice is really all about me and about my experience, my peace, my calm, something that's happening in my head. And it's like, well, maybe that's the delusion, that there's this separate me who can be sort of blocked off and awakened, that my awakening, my happiness depends on you. And often I can't see who I am, but you can see who I am. And you might not see yourself, but we can see you, you know? And so I love this idea of we're sort of looking at each other, we're pointing to each other. And So I thank you for being here and for sharing your vertical noses and your your horizontal eyes and practicing together is you know, truly, we need each other for this, and truly, it's something that is enacted together. So maybe let's just sit for a minute. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues forever. Thank you very much. So one announcement is that in a few moments, Brian and I will put up sign-up sheets on the dining room doors for practice discussions tomorrow. And so the basic idea of the practice discussion is everyone in the retreat will have one meeting with each of us. So if you have your meeting on Tuesday with Max, then your next one will be Thursday with Brian. If yours is on tomorrow with Brian, then Thursday with me. And then, so there's space for about half of us will go tomorrow, and then half will start their practice discussion Wednesday, and then the day after, Friday. So does that make sense? And what we'd like to request is that if you're newer to practice, if this is your first retreat, or you know, just early in your practice, we invite you to sign up tomorrow. And if you've been, you know, if you're an old timer, you know, just hang back a little bit and see what gets filled, and then you know. But if there's still places by tomorrow morning, anyone, feel free to sign up. Okay, thank you.